I've got some exciting news. Sandy Boy Productions Podcast Network has recently launched a brand new podcast called the Trail Network Podcast. This is hosted by Leah Yingling, Rachel Drake, Katie Asmuth, and Hillary Yang. Together, they bring the untold stories of magical moments amongst trail runners to life. These stories of runners on and off the trail capture the essence and heart of trail running and the power of friendship and connection. You'll find inspiration, community, and a reminder of why we run. We launched this week with 3 episodes. Episode 1, introducing all 4 hosts, where you can learn a little bit about their histories with running. Episode 2, we hear from Leah Yingling and her husband, Mike McMonagall, as they recap Leah's race at Lululemon's Further event and Mike's experience crewing her. And then episode 3 is with Matt Daniels and Francisco Poopy recapping their recent head-to-head race at Chuckanut 50. That episode is hosted by Rachel Drake. So go give them a follow. The Trail Network Pod on Instagram. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts, and give these women some love. Let's go listen to the podcast. It's going to be a good one. I'm so excited to have them in the network, and I'm so grateful they trusted Sandy Boy Productions with the editing and production of the podcast. Big thanks to my editor and production assistant, Emma Benner, who has really taken the lead on helping these women launch the podcast, and she's done an amazing job. Go check it out, the Trail Network Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to All Have Another Podcast with Lindsay Hine. I am your host, Lindsay. Thanks for being here today. My guest is Dawn Harper Nelson today. Pumped for this interview. She was such a blast to talk to. She is a retired track and field athlete. She won gold in the 2008 Beijing Olympics in the 100-meter hurdles. And she was a silver medalist in the 2012 London Games, as well as the 2017 World Championships. She's actually the first American 100-meter hurdler to ever win gold at an Olympics and medal in the following Olympics. Wow. So in this conversation, we talk about her trajectory on the track. Of course, when she found her love for running and hurdles, being coached by Bob Kersey, retirement, what that looks like, becoming a mom. She's the mother of 2. She's also a motivational speaker, and we got off the interview and then we were immediately texting and calling about things. And I was like, I want to do a live podcast with her because she is so much fun. I'm excited for this next phase of Dawn's career on the other side of the track, behind the microphone, speaking, calling races. She's got so much ahead of her and is a fun follow, by the way. Go follow her on Instagram. She's dharp100mh on Instagram. If you enjoy the podcast today with Dawn, please reach out to her on Instagram. Tell her what you thought. And you can find me as well. I'm LindsayHine626 on Instagram. I would love to hear what you think about the episode as well. All the show notes for these podcasts are at sandyboyproductions.com. Just click on the All Have Another tab and everything we talked about is in there. You can even sign up for the newsletter there so that the show notes get delivered to your inbox every week. If you enjoy the podcast, the easiest, freest way to support the show is to just leave us a review, a 5-star review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. That's huge. It really is. And I am so grateful anytime we get a new review over there. That is one of the ways new listeners can find us, believe it or not. 8 years into this show and I'm still asking y'all for ratings and reviews. Oh, I love this one. I've been listening for years and I just love this podcast. I especially really enjoyed the long episode with Tommy Runs. Lindsay does a fantastic job being relatable and inspiring at the same time with her content and the info she shares about herself and her life. One of the best. Aw, that is so nice. J.M. Nintwig was the name there. That was February 28th. That was a recent review. Thank you. That means the world. We've had a lot of good feedback from the Tommy episode. If you haven't listened to that episode with Tommy Runs on the podcast feed, definitely check it out. He's one of my friends and co-hosts on the Relay podcast, and we did a 2-hour and 15-minute podcast over here. So check that out. We dropped it on February 22nd on this feed. All right, friends, and I want to let you know I'm going to be at the Bay Shore Marathon May 25th, Saturday, May 25th. This is in beautiful Traverse City, Michigan. This is the 42nd annual Bay Shore Marathon. The marathon and the half are actually sold out, but you can still grab a spot in the 10K. By the time this airs, it might be sold out as well. I'll be hosting a live podcast recording on Thursday, May 23rd with Des Linden at the historic Traverse City Opera House. You can register at bayshoremarathon.org for that. And then get this, the name of one person that's registered for the show will be pulled on May 10th for an exclusive dinner with myself and Des prior to the show. We will also be hosting a shakeout run on Friday morning. And Des will help me send off everybody in the morning for the races, as I will be doing the race announcing as well. So definitely check out bayshoremarathon.org. Let me know if you'll be there. I'm so excited to see everybody in Traverse City, Michigan. All right, please enjoy my conversation with Dawn Harper Nelson. All right, friends, today on the podcast, we have Dawn Harper Nelson on the show. Welcome to the show, Dawn.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited to talk with you. I've wanted to talk to you for a few years now. It's funny, some of these conversations, I think about it. I pitch, I forget to pitch. But then I saw you at Steph's party like 2 years ago. And we're like, yeah, we're going to record. And here we are two years later.
Yeah.
How was that 2 years ago?
I don't understand, first of all. But it's so funny because I'm telling you, when I saw the email, I read it, the one from 2 years ago. I read it. Let me look at my schedule. And then I was like, why is she mentioning that? It's not relevant. What do you mean Steph's party? I was like, yeah. Oh my. I said, this says 22. I was like,
You were literally about to have a baby though, like when I emailed you.
This is true. I did look at the date and I was like, oh, I had a baby a couple weeks later. But still, yeah. You know.
It was like when you're getting close to having the baby and you're like, I can still do all these things. Nothing. And then it's like, yeah.
Nothing.
And then I'm like, well, I'm not going to even reach out for like 6 months. And then 6 months turned into, how old's your baby now? Like 18 months?
Right. She's 13 months.
Oh my gosh.
Yep.
How's that going?
It's going great. She is different than her sister, which is great. But she is like, why are you not holding me? Why are you not? Why are you not? Why are you not? But I will say it's because she started off with really bad eczema. Like it was, so when we took her in, they were like, no, her skin's on fire. So that's why she's actually been fussy. And I was like, oh, it makes sense.
Yeah.
It turned into, she's used to being held now.
Yes. Oh man. Yes. It's crazy. Do you see those videos where it's like, this is my firstborn. This is my second. This is my third. And it's like, they just get wilder and wilder and wilder.
So we're done. Thanks.
Yeah. Okay. So you're in Illinois. So I know you grew up in East St. Louis. Do you live around there now?
Yeah. I'm about on the highway 15 minutes, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I go back home all the time, like in East St. Louis. Yep.
And your parents live there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I ran the St. Louis Marathon one time, like years ago, maybe 2011. And at the time I worked at this is so random, but I thought I'd just tell you. I worked at the senior center.
Okay.
And one of the guys that was a member, his name was Earl. And he was like, you're going to St. Louis? And I was like, yes. And he's like, can you drop me off in East St. Louis on your way to the marathon? And I was like, sure. So my husband and I drive to St. Louis with Earl in the back seat, drop him off at his place, go run the marathon, and then go pick him back up. And
what?
I know. I was like, we don't do stuff like that anymore. It's because we have kids, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, who has time? And then it's like, do I know this person? It's just so many things that go through your head of like, yeah, that's amazing that you did that on your way to a marathon, first of all.
I know. And I'm like, I'm so glad we did. Because like, I saw Earl most days because he would come to the senior center. But like, we spent 4 hours together. And So anyway, yeah, that's my St. Louis story.
Right. So you drove through. Nice.
We drove through. Okay. So let's hear about your story a little bit, but let's start now. Start what, cause you have your new podcast, you have your babies. Yes. Like, what is your life right now?
My life right now is realizing that I'm blessed from track, but you're still in that phase, even though it's been a couple years, like, how do I want to continue my love for it and maximize that, right? I feel like you have all these thoughts and ideas, and you're like, well, in the track and field space or sports space, how does that work? And so one part of it that I've realized after talking with my husband and some friends, people are always asking me, what is the Olympic journey like? Like, what do you do? What is the, like, all the questions. And so I've started on my Instagram. I call it do or die, because you either do it or the dream dies, right? Ah. And I'm very kind of straightforward. Some of it is silly, but all of it is very like, no, but I'm serious. You know, like, this is kind of what you will experience. Or if you're an athlete right now, this may be how you're feeling. And this is what you got to do. You know what I mean? Just hitting them kind of between the eyes of, you know, how to kind of interact with your coach, dealing with seeing people perform really well and you like, it's going shaky. Or one of my posts I did really well was accepting death. Like, you're going
I was just about to watch that. Tell me about it.
You're going to die. Like, look me in the eyes and understand, when you're going for a dream, just in sports, athletic, just in general, you're going to push your body and have to push your body to places you've never imagined. Your coach's job is to bring you so far outside of your comfort zone that you're supposed to think they're crazy, right? Because you have to have that knowledge and that physical understanding to even want to toe the line. That's not even crossing the line in the top three. That's just saying, I believe that I have the skill that it takes. And so I kind of go through that, like, accepting death of, you know, you said all this, but now you're at the point where you, you know, mentally, physically, everything says you can't, but are you going to get up and keep pushing? So I kind of do a fun way of saying it, but in a, bring you in that moment and kind of have you thinking of, like, this is, oh, that's what it's like. So just kind of that, giving the perspective of the athlete along the Olympic journey.
Wow. Okay. When was the first time you remembered that that happened to you? Like,
death?
Yes. Like, in that a coach, you know, spoke those things into you and like way more than you realized you had the potential for.
Okay. So that would have to be back to probably, probably, to be honest, like junior high, I actually ran cross country.
Okay.
And our first day of cross country practice, we had 7 miles.
That's crazy for high school.
Junior high.
7 miles? That's insane.
And mind you, I did not really know what cross country was. My father told me, hey, you're going to run cross country. I didn't want to do this. This was not my passion. So
100 meter hurdler here.
Right? Like, okay. So at the time, what, 13, 14 seconds? And so, yeah, but no, I get there. Of course, they're like, oh, we're going to run. And I was like, wait, where are we going? Like, cars, vehicles are supposed to do that. And so I remember I kind of go to my dad and he's like, when you start something, you finish it. And I'm like, I didn't start it. Like, I didn't do this. Of course, I didn't say it like that. But I was like, but dad, this is what. And I started. But it was just one of those things where eventually you realize, for me, if I want to be really good in the hurdles, didn't know Olympics about all that yet, but really good, I've been told that this is something that I have to embrace. And so my coach was like, I just remember along that route, he's just like, come on, kiddo. Come on. Keep it moving. And I'm like, can we see it yet? Like, what's going on? He's like,
that is crazy.
It is. And so, yeah, so that was one of the moments. But I mean, really thinking about times where I was like dead and the coach knew, like the conversation wasn't like, come on, kiddo, was with Bobby Kersey. And it was an example at UCLA. And we were ending with the 200, the workout. We had done over 2000 meters and everyone was like dead. We're all sprinters and we're dying. And we had 200s left and we had two left. The second to last one, the first group didn't hit their time. Second group didn't hit their time. Third and fourth group didn't. Bobby leaves the track and he goes and gets a chair from under the stands. We don't know where he got it from. And it was getting late. And he puts the chair in the middle of the field and he yells in a very expressive way, if you don't run my god doggone time, I'm going to pay to turn these MFing lights on. You will be out here until you run. First group ran 2 seconds too fast. Second group ran 2 seconds too fast. Everybody, we just rode out. And that for me was the moment of like, oh, okay, so you're just giving in to either the environment of what everyone else is doing. You're giving in to, oh, I'm tired. But all of a sudden, this man that's crazy yells at you and you have it in you. You got to change that here. So that for me was the moment of like, okay, you have more in you than you think.
Okay, I'm so curious as a mom now, like if someone was coaching one of your daughters saying that, like, what would your feelings be?
So I think in so many ways I'm cut from a different cloth.
Huh.
And I say that because, first of all, I was 18, 19 years old. So I wasn't 12, 13.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Different area. College.
Yep.
There is a different expectation. Mm-hmm. And at that time, you're saying you want to go to the Olympics. And sweetie, not everyone is going to say it to you in the, hey, I know you're tired. Get Sometimes you're going to have to get the message behind the craziness. Like, understand, like we say with Bobby, there's a method to the madness. And so for me, I think I want to prep my daughter for there are going to be coaches that may not use language that you hear from mommy and daddy. That doesn't necessarily mean they're a bad person. Now, if they're coming at you like, you so-and-so, so-and-so, pause. Okay. We're not doing, you're not attacking them like this. Right. But he's yelling to the group, get y'all tails up. He didn't say, Dawn, you're, you know, so that's, I mean, there's a way to do it. So that's how I say I'm cut from a different cloth of, they're trying to pull the best from you, but he didn't call you out your name. He didn't. So that's where, for me, it's like, I'm there listening and I'm like, that was tiptoeing, but she got up and ran really well.
So it makes me think, like, I don't know how to say this without offending people, but like, we have become kind of soft.
Come on. I'm sorry. And like you said, like, hey guys, please don't attack us. But sometimes I do feel that way.
Yeah.
And I saw this, I think Joanna Hayes was just doing a podcast the other day. Well, it may have been a couple weeks now. I was watching it the other day. And she was saying now, because of the portal and just the way things are, athletes are like, I don't like the way that they, you know, I'm And like I said, there is a time when someone can be inappropriate. Please understand, there are a lot of inappropriate people out there.
Yes.
But if you know this coach, and at the time we had a relationship, so I understand Bobby is very invested and cares. And it's like, you can't sneeze anymore. And it's like, was that directed towards me? And it's like, did it fix me when I wasn't talking to you? So
That's so interesting. Yeah. My son plays soccer and he just started rugby, and like, his soccer coach is like, I don't mean this in a negative way, but he's kind of like gentle parenting of soccer. Like, he's he's quiet. He's
okay.
But he's good.
Yes.
And it's been a really good experience. And well, we went to rugby for the first time and he was like, that coach was kind of mean. He yelled at me and blah, blah, blah. And one of the other kids was like, he just does that at first. Like, you'll get used to it, whatever. But I'm like, I think, and he wasn't being inappropriate, but my son just wasn't used to it. But I think it's good for them to experience the different styles of coaching, right? Like,
yeah, totally. I think personally, I have friends that their coaches, that's just not how they talk to them. Like, they didn't need that. Like, and not saying need, because not saying I needed that, but that just wasn't how they did it. And it worked for them. And so I'm very clear that, like, a friend of mine, my best friend, Ivory, from when we were kids, her mother could tell her, I am very disappointed in you. And she was like, oh, God, I'm not my life together. Me? I might have still tiptoed on the line a little bit, right? So my mother, our upbringing were different. Even now, she's just not that aggressive parent. And I, even now to my daughter, the way I say no, ma'am, my one-year-old is like, oh.
Okay.
It's, like you said, it's different styles, but I like that. To me, I love that there are different people in the world. I want everyone to be, that doesn't work for everyone. So yeah, I think that my key, like I said, as much as I can, I want to prep my daughters for, hey, if they raise their voice, I know, like, their father, Alonzo, just will never yell at them. It's not.
Oh, he doesn't. Oh, I wonder, because they're girls, you think?
Absolutely. It's not a question. It's not a do I think. He said he did it one time with Harper. She had potted on herself. She was playing in the living room, didn't go to the potty. And so it was one of those, like, we told her to go. She's like, I don't have to.
Yeah.
And she pottied. And then he was just shocked. He was like, so he took us to the bathroom. He was like, you know better. And I was like, wow. And it was such a, you know better, Harper. Don't you do. It was not loud at all. So he's never done that. And he came out of the bathroom. He goes, I can't do that again. I said, no, babe. It's okay. I was like, I got it. And he's very stern with her with things. Like, he'll say, Harper, we're not doing that. But he did the, like, we shouldn't be. And I was like, he's going to cry. He's going to cry. So, yeah. But yeah.
You know, I've thought about that because I have all boys. And and my husband, he yells at them, you know. And I'm like, I wonder how he would be with a girl. You know, different probably.
Absolutely. I say that to say my husband is the head track at his high school. Now, yes, they are older, but he is very, like, I'm the mama bear out there. So I have moments when I'm like, I'll say this, no, like, I, like, I'm jumping in the way and I'm like, not my babies. So I am different with them. But then you have your moments when I'm like, now he's told you twice.
Yeah.
If I have to say something, they're like, and they'll say, we don't want her to say something. You know, so it's a, so yeah, I think you do have times when the guys will be different, but I feel like to a certain extent, they hear it differently from different genders sometimes.
Yeah.
Right.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm like, where do we even go from here? Let's go with Bobby Kersey though, because I know Jackie Joyner Kersey is from your hometown. Yep. So that's a really big deal. And then I was like doing digging. I'm like, when did she realize like I have talent to go to college for this, possibly be in the Olympics? And it's like you broke the state record in Illinois as a freshman.
Yeah. So
I mean, that's crazy.
So I think in this, hear me out. I'm not trying to belittle the moment.
Yeah.
I think sometimes when you're in it, you don't, like when it's your goal, especially as a kid, think about it. Someone said, oh, in the state, you know, when you get to state, like, oh man, everyone's faster, but you don't get
state.
Like right now, if your child broke the state record, you'd be like, sweetie, that is, you're trying to control yourself because you're like, yeah, I won. Not necessarily I broke the state record. So I just knew that I was pretty good. Like I knew I was pretty good. I knew I had been undefeated my freshman year, but for me, it was like, well, I haven't met up with the dogs yet.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, you know, and so that was my mindset. And I always knew that how I was trained and raised was every day someone else is working just as hard as you. I know you think you're working hard and I know you think you're talented. And they didn't belittle that, but they're like, sweet, you have to understand. Like there are other dogs. You think you're a monster, but there are other monsters that exist. And so for me, when I got there my freshman year, I knew there was a girl named Crystal Riley. She was a senior and she had the state record. And this was her final year. And that the race was between us two. And I just know the gun goes off. And all I'm thinking of is like, just let me at it. Like, I just let me at it. And she had a good start. And I go and I cross the line. And I always say it's one of the sweetest things is one of my assistant coaches, he was one of the like officials at the finish line. And so there's like an actual footage of him coming over and giving me like a fist bump. Like, but he couldn't go too much. He was just like, and I'm like, you know, because it was like, you did it.
Yeah.
But it was weird enough. There was this part of me of like, even though I'm like, you know, I did it. It was like, oh, I just ruined her senior year. Uh-huh. You know, just like, shoot. Yeah. But then we had to meet again in 300 hurdles. And then I did it to her again. And it was like, well, look, sis. Okay. This is what we're doing. But yeah, it was, that's when, to be honest, that's when I knew that I was different.
Uh-huh.
But it still didn't like hit. Until, you know, you get to college and then you're like, oh, everyone, these are the monsters.
Yeah. What's Crystal doing today? She probably feels better knowing that you went on to win a gold medal in the Olympics.
Oh, literally, so many people come up to me that ran against me in high school and they're like, you used to beat me, but it's fine. You won the Olympics. I was supposed to get beat by you. And I'm like, well, that's a cool way of
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, everybody. I want to give you a quick rundown of the events I will be at for the remainder of spring. I'm going to be in Boston for Boston Marathon weekend, and I've got three events going on that weekend. I do not have all the details for each of the events, but let me tell you for sure, so you can go ahead and get registered before it sells out Saturday, April 13th from 2:30 to 4 at the IHQ Hacker Reactor Building. 292 Main Street. My relay co-host Tommy Runs and I will be joined by Kira D'Amato talking about running your best Boston. That's presented by Destination Marathons and UCAN. And you can get tickets now. You're definitely going to want to get tickets. I'm sure it will sell out. They're $15. And with that $15, there will be a little goodie bag with some UCAN products for you to enjoy as well. The link to register for that event will be in my show notes at sandywayproductions.com. I also have an event on Friday night from 5 to 6:30 with Joanna Garten. Her new book, All in Stride, is an inspiring story of distance runners Elvin Kabet and Shadrach Kipchirchir and their determination to build meaningful lives as new American citizens. They are professional distance runners who grew up in rural Kenyan villages. Though their life began in poverty, both were driven to reach their full potential to gain an education and make a difference. And they would find their way to do that through the high-pressure world of distance running. So her book is launching April 2nd, which is super exciting, coming up. And we are going to have an event on Friday, April 12th in Boston from 5 to 6:30. We are going to have information about that posted soon. We'll have that in the show notes at sandyboyproductions.com. And then I'm doing another event on Saturday after the UCAN event with Wazelle and Kara Goucher. I'm going to be co-moderating a panel with Kara Goucher and Wazelle for her Fast Girls live panel. Kara did an event like that at the Olympic Trials and it went over really well. So we're going to do it in Boston and I'm so excited to be joining Kara and Wazelle for this event. All the information for that will be at the in the show notes at sandyboyproductions.com. Okay, so those are the three Boston events. I'm also going to be at the 500 Festival Mini Marathon. At the Expo, I have a talk I'm going to be doing on Friday, May 3rd at 3 p.m. at the Expo of the 500 Festival Mini Marathon in Indianapolis. So if you're running that race, make sure you plan your Expo trip at that time at 3 p.m. on Friday, May 3rd. And then lastly, I'll be at the Bayshore Marathon the weekend of May 25th. The race is Saturday, May 25th. I'm going to have a meetup, a shakeout run, a live podcast recording. It's going to be a really great weekend. I can't wait to see you there. So that's going to wrap up the spring events for me. And if you're at any of those events, please come by and say hi. I would love to meet you. All right, friends, back to the show. So you choose to go to UCLA because of Bobby Kersee.
Absolutely. Bobby Kersee, Jackie Joyner Kersee, and Gail Devers, among many others. But hurling-wise, those two for me were like, I have to go there. Like, that's the school. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. 100-meter hurdles is got to be the most intense race on
track. I totally agree. And I would
argue. It has to be, right? because it's like the fastest and you're jumping over things. Because like other things you jump over, 300 hurdles, steeplechase, like there's some breathing in between.
Yes, you have time to be like, oh man, okay, we're going to do this next. No, it is. And then you have the people beside you that if there's a such thing as being locked in a rhythm with someone else. So you have to deal with that or deal with being behind or ahead.
Tell us about that, the locked in the rhythm.
So it's, I don't know. I can't necessarily pinpoint when I realized how to break a rhythm, but so you know how if you're going on a run, even with long distance, I've seen, you know, you guys, you're on a run, you're going with a training partner, and you're almost like left, right, left, right, and you find comfort in that because it almost is like hypnotizing, right? Because you're just like, it's helping you ignore the first, like at least a minute of the run, 2 minutes. You're just like, I'm just going to zone out. We're just doing, you're going to knock it out together. That happens in the hurdle race, but it's very intense. And you literally can go over hurdle, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2. And you almost get locked in where you feel your arms moving together. You feel your legs moving together. And I always say there has to be something very violent that has to happen to break that. Because you're locked. You almost like, you're like, I'm going to go. And then, but you find yourself saying it to the rhythm. I'm going to go. No, you have to do something violent. And I did that because that's what I do to my hurdlers. So you're talking it. If you do that in somebody's face, you're like, what? You have to do that to yourself in a race. In
How
a control.
Do you do that?
So either you slam your trail arm out of rhythm. So if you're like, I'm going to go, right? You have to shake that up. Or you slam your lead arm really hard to shake yourself out of that rhythm. So something has to change to take you out of that. So that's pretty much how you, I know it sounds interesting.
No, yeah. But at what level do you learn that? Like, did you learn that in high school?
That's hard. No. Well, I didn't. I can't say no, I didn't. That's really hard to do. I learned that when I was a professional because I would have times when I would be at practice and I'm doing hurdles or something with my training partner and I'm noticing we're going over the first hurdle, second hurdle. I'm like, oh, no, I got to shake her. So, you know, you got to do something violent to, and then I'm like, oh, okay, that's how you try and like, okay, I got to pull away. Yeah, but
wow.
I can't. Yeah, I don't, yeah. I was a student. Yeah. Kind of my event. I wanted to understand, like, to be in almost any position, how do I either better it, hold on to it, right? You know, and yeah.
Wow. It's so intense, too. Yeah. Like, how do you practice for that intensity?
So, to be honest, Bobby was really good at training that. He would always say, I don't need a race to get you ready for the final. Like, he didn't need meets. Like, we would be at track meets, and he would find a way to get you in the mental headspace, whether it be something, and he know, like for each athlete, it would be something different. Mm. Like for me, we would have hurdle pads on the hurdles. So if you hit a hurdle, it doesn't, like you won't fall and it won't scrape your knee up. And so that's to help you with longevity and stuff. Mm. So he would say something where if you touch a hurdle pad, first of all, if you hit a hurdle pad, that means in the race, either you fail or, you know, you threw yourself off and now you're losing. So you have to treat the hurdle pads like they're the actual hurdle. So if you touch them, you're telling yourself, oh my God, I just lost. Right. Yep. So it's that serious, but it's there to protect you. So you can keep going and make your corrections. So anyways, if I'm running at practice and if I would touch a hurdle pad, Bobby would tell me before the race, he'd be like, if you touch one of those hurdle pads, you have a 500. If you touch a hurdle pad, you have this much more. Or if you touch a hurdle pad, you have stadiums. So he's putting you in the headspace of this is do or die. Yeah. Or when it got close to the Olympics, he's like, if you touch a hurdle pad, you lost the Olympics. Well, doggone it. Well, I'm not going to touch a hurdle pad, right? Yeah. So for me, that would work. He would say something different possibly, you know, for, but he knew like it was so, I took it very seriously. And so in my mind, I would say, okay, I have Sally from Australia, you know, to my right. I got, you know, this person to my left. And I would create a scene in my mind and like, okay, stands are full. And so I'm like, butterflies sick to my stomach. And I'm like, and Bobby would say the race goes off at say 10 a.m. He would come around the corner at like 9:55 and he would be like, 5 minute call. So I've warmed up on my own. And at 9:55, he comes around. He has a starter pistol and everything. Mm. And 1 minute, he's like, 1 minute, stand behind your blocks. And it's a full, and he's like, you have one rep. You warmed up for one rep. Mm. And so he's like, runners on your mark. You go through the whole thing. He times it. And you know whether you won the Olympics or you didn't. And so however you perform there, you go home. You literally go to your bags. You get stuff, you go home. So you either live with that result for, say, the rest of the day, or if it's Tuesday, we have Wednesday off, so you don't have practice again until Thursday. So you're just like, I hit that hurdle pad. Like, you know you have to get your knee. You know, you're just talking to yourself. And so he's teaching you how to respect and execute in that moment without always having to go and travel somewhere. Mm-hmm. You know, because sometimes that's not the most beneficial.
Yeah. Okay, so a couple things I'm thinking, like, how you were prepared for the intensity of his coaching through your high school career, how much of that was like your coaches, your parents, and just you being ready for that?
Okay. Well, definitely a lot of it definitely was me, because my mother was saying when I was a young kid, I was hard on myself, like very, very hard. And my mother would tell me when I was a young kid, she's like, you cannot be this hard on yourself. She's like, you just can't. She's like, Dawn, you, she's like, sweetie, this is a math problem. And you cannot be like, because I'm like, I understood, you know, math 1 through 10, 11 is stomping me and I don't understand because I like math and I thought I got it. And I don't, like, I'm just like, you know, I'm like, what is, she's like, hey, you're going to get it. And I'm like, argh. And so she really talked about that, but that's how I absolutely was through my career. And in some ways, it was a detriment. It was not beneficial to be that hard. Girl, come on. Like, the world is not ending.
Yeah.
You did
not
win this race. Or if this practice didn't go that well, did you finish healthy? Okay. So that means you get to live to fight another day. And did you not say your goal is the Olympics? Well, it's March. Calm down. Right? And then say that it is the Olympics when I got silver. By that time, I had understood what the big picture looked like, as in I won my first Olympics, but your second one, you got silver. Well, what you prayed for was to be ready in the moment, right? To be in the best shape of your life, which you were, to be mentally ready, because that's the, you were talking about the physical, now the mental, to be ready when that gun goes off, to give everything you have, and literally I prayed to give the world a good show. Because, you know, so many times, you know, you have the two competitors or the three, four, however many, it was me and Sally. So the two competitors, something happens to one of them when you're like, oh, I wanted to see that race of those two. And for me, it was, so the first Olympics, I got gold, she got silver. And throughout those 3 years in between, we were both boom, 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 boom. And at this Olympics, we both were running. We PR through each round, both of us. So it was like, the world's like, who's it gonna be? And when I lost by 0.02, what I was able to do, not be that little girl Dawn of like, oh my God, I lost. Well, I tied the Olympic record. You gave the world a show. You all the things were checked off. It doesn't always look exactly like you want it. Mm. But for that one box to not be checked, you will not say this is not a blessing.
Ah, oh, so good. Yeah. This is a wild ride. Yes. I mean, let's just like talk about, first of all, winning your first Olympics, because it seems like, minus a few people, like you make it to your first Olympics. Yes. And that is a celebration.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And you were the third person. Yes. At the trials to make the team.
Yes, made about 0.007.
And then to win. Yeah. So how do you like, I want to know like how you walked through, like, I'm celebrating being at the Olympics. I'm also here to win, even though I was the third one in.
So some of that was, I had knee surgery February 29th. So it was a leap year. All Olympics are on a leap year, right? Uh-huh. So you always have the extra day. I literally had surgery February 29th on my knee. So that set me back, obviously, training-wise.
For the trials.
For the trials. Okay. And so not saying that, oh, I just would have blew them out the water. It's not what I'm saying. But I don't feel like I was physically where originally I would have been, right?
Yeah, so that's some important context.
It's very much so. So me and my coach were like, look, you're going to execute. We're going to get on this team. So you're going to buy us these next few months. Right?
Yeah.
Literally physically get you to where we think you should be. But still, making that team, everything you just said is true. When I say everyone, except for my coach, said, you made your first team. That's it. Like, that's the goal.
Yeah.
And it was like, I mean, it's really nice and everything, but like, why not go and get a medal? Like, why?
Because yeah.
Over, I can't remember his name, but it was a thrower I was sitting next to, and he meant no harm. He's like, I mean, like, yeah, that's cool and everything. But he's like, everyone just, you enjoy your first Olympics. Your second one is when you go and try and get a medal. Uh-huh. And I was like, I don't know how to say this, but like, I don't want to talk to you anymore. Because it was like, I didn't want those thoughts to come, you know?
No. Yeah.
Like, he was being so sweet, but I was like, no.
That's not why I'm here.
And then when I got there, my mindset was, if Bobby says jump, I'm going to say how high. Because I felt like, this is not the same 100 meters. There's no way that this is 100. He's like, hey, kiddo, it's the same 100 meters. And I'm like, are you sure? Did you measure? Because it just felt so, it's the Olympics. And so he's like, look, it's the same measurement. The hurdles are on the same mark. You're the same. You're going to start from the same starting line as everybody else. He's like, don't make it bigger than what it is. Mm. And what was helpful was Bobby has won since the 1984 Olympics. He has from every Olympics at least one gold medal.
Mm. Wow.
Exactly, right? And wow. So for me, I'm like, listen to him. He knows the mental, physical. So that's why I was like, what am I doing? Oh, I'm going to go eat breakfast. Okay. Like, what do I do now? I'm going to take a nap. You know, of course it wasn't like that, but I really was, that was how I feel like I got through it. I trusted my relationship with Bobby. I trusted his expertise. And just was like, I just want to leave it all out there. That's what I want to walk away with.
How did you approach the rounds? Do you have three rounds?
You have three rounds.
So, like knowing obviously you want to go for gold, and I guess I'm a little more familiar with the distance rounds. Mm-hmm. Tell me like how you approach it as a 100 meter hurdler.
Right. So that's the thing. You approach it differently, obviously, for sprints, the hurdles, but you also approach it differently depending kind of where you are in your career, right? Uh-huh. Because first Olympics, literally Bobby's like, I need you to go out here. He's like, I need you to run. He said, I need you to get top three. I think it was, he was like, I need you to get top three. It was more than top three qualified, but he's like, I need you to stay in the head.
Yeah.
The top three.
Yeah.
You belong every round. You're top three. Uh-huh. Every round. Right. And so he's like, I need you to get top three. And so I go out and he's like, he told me to run, say around like 12.7 or something. Right. And I'm like, okay. So I go out, I think I got second. I'm like, okay. And then the next round, he's like, look, this round is about, he said, you need to win it to get a good lane. He's like, I want you in the middle of the track. And so I'm like, okay. So he's like, I need you to win it. Now I go out and I clip hurdle, like say five or six, and I end up getting second. And I'm going to be like, I messed up. I'm going to be on the outside. I didn't follow the plan. And but I looked up and I think I was in lane like five or six. So it was just like, yay. I don't know. That worked out. But I thought Bobby lost his mind for the finals, because I go to the back and we're starting to warm up. And so the first round is say on a Thursday. And then the semis and finals are on Friday. So that's two rounds in one day. Mm-hmm. And I do the second round where I get second. And Bobby, I come to the back and I'm telling him, he's like, all right, kiddo. You know, like, all right. All right. And I'm like, all right. So he's like, okay, we're going to start your warm up. I start my warm up, jog and stretch a little bit. Not too much because I just ran. And then I'm doing drills. And I go over the first hurdle. He's like, all right, sit down. I'm like, okay. He's sitting in a chair and he's like, sit right here beside him. And I'm like, okay, now literally all the other hurdlers for the finals are going out of blocks over hurdles. And I'm literally sitting on the ground with my legs crossed like a kid. And I was like, he's went crazy. This man, like, I don't know what happened, but it got to my Olympics and he lost it. He just sat his athlete down and he's like, just sitting. I'm like, okay. I'm like, oh my gosh. But weird enough, in the tent that we were sitting in, someone was playing a radio, which is hilarious. And so it was a song by Lupe Fiasco. And the song goes, it's called Superstar. And it says, if you are who you say you are, a superstar, have no fear. The lights are here. The camera's here. And it's like, the moment is here. If you're ready, if you say, I just remember thinking that song. And I was like, okay, so I'm singing it in my head over and over again. I look crazy because I'm just like going. Now I've done no more warm up. They're like, last call. I go to the back. I haven't done anything else. Bobby sat me down that whole time and I've just seen my competitors warm up. Go inside and he's like, nope. And so I'm sitting there and I'm just singing the song over and over. No headphones, no nothing. I'm just, if you are who you say you are, a superstar. And I'm just feeling it. I go out. I mean, I line up, gun goes off. And, you know, I will say this, when the gun went off, I saw Delarine London. She was on my left side from Jamaica. I saw her foot and I said, well, you're not winning. So we need to do something about that, right? And so, you know, I make my move. Bobby told me to run like a horse with blinders on because in the hurdles, so many things happen. Like it's carnage. It's chaos. It is.
Yeah.
So he said, run with blinders on. And so when I saw her foot, I was like, oh, went. And all I knew is I crossed the line. I leaned for my life. I crossed the line. And when I looked up, by the time I looked up, that's when everyone was on my side again. So I saw Sally from Australia. She's screaming. And I'm like, I got second because I knew I had placed top three. Like, I got second. I'm like, yeah. Then Priscilla from Canada starts screaming. I'm like, I got third, baby. Yeah. And then that's when Damu Cherry from the U.S., she came over and she's like, look up. She's like, you won.
And oh, my gosh.
Like, I know. It was like, what? And so I say that to say briefly, that was how I ran the first Olympics. The second Olympics, Bobby's conversation was very different. The first one, he just warmed. Did he even come to the first round? I don't think he came to the track for the first round. Because he's like, I didn't need him there. I was like, we had already talked about it. He was like, about 12-7 to get you through. I was like, all right. Literally, I warm up. I go out there, jog 12-7. I walk off like, thank you. The next round, the next day, he comes and he's like, all right, you need to go in PR. I was like, okay. And I go out and I PR. And I felt like I went out the first three hurdles and then just shut down. But my rhythm was so fast. I was like, this will be enough. And I crossed the line in PR, go to the back. And for the finals, he's like, you know what to do. I was like, all right. Like, it was such the conversation was totally different. I ended up walking the track with my my massage guy that came out with me. Yeah, because Bobby was like,
which year is this that you're talking about, right? With walking the track, 12. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you remember what Bobby said to you after you won gold?
Oh, well, what I love is I wish someone was recording. Like how nowadays everyone's recorded.
Yes.
Like I know somebody would have been recording him because they said that him and Valerie Briscoe Hooks were sitting on the high jump mat and they were watching the race. And so they're sitting like this and they said, as soon as I won, they both just took off and went the opposite directions, just start running around in circles like this, screaming like, she won. I'm like, I wish I would have seen that.
Oh, the video would have been so good.
It's so good, right? But what I love is when I saw Bobby, he was like, you saved me. I was his only gold medal.
Oh, you were the only one. Thing. When he sat you down in that tent and that song was on, did he know the song was on? Like, did he put that together?
He does not care. He could care less about that type of stuff. He was not. Yeah.
He wasn't paying attention. I thought, like, did he hear a lyric and think, like, she needs to hear this right now?
No.
But it just hit you.
Yes. It was just playing right over. And I was just like, well, okay, what? And I was like, oh, yeah, true. And then it's just.
So that's always going to be your song that reminds you.
Always.
Of that.
Yep.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Here's the other thing we haven't talked about that people might not know is that you weren't sponsored.
No, I worked three jobs. And I actually ran in one of my training partners. I won the Olympics in one of my training partner's shoes. So, I know it, no, it's really, it's one of those, if you had to write a story, I say, especially for that year, there are moments you wouldn't have written because you're like, that's just not believable. And it really did happen. In my training group, there were four hurdlers, the defending Olympic champion, two-time world champion, two different people, two-time world champion. So Joanna Hayes was a defending champion. Michelle Perry, two-time world champion. And she had been ranked number one in the world for the 3 years before that. Like, I mean, she did not lose a race for 3 years. And then this was the Olympic year. And then there was the collegiate record holder, Jeannie Powell, that went to SC, that whooped on me my whole career. And they all had beautiful Nike contracts. They came to practice every day decked out in their gear with their name on their shoes, BMW, Mercedes. And I was driving in my old car. My dad got me working three jobs. It was crazy.
What was the deal though? Like, why didn't you have a contract and did you have an agent? Like, that seems crazy that you had that caliber of talent that you were going in and had the potential to win a gold medal and you didn't have a contract.
Well, first of all, let's just remember Nike shoe companies, just kind of in general, especially going into Olympic year, they almost want the like, yeah. She's for sure. Right.
And you hadn't had that yet.
I had not had that yet. I got third, so indoors and outdoors for junior year and senior year, third indoors, outdoors for 60 hurdles and 100 hurdles. But that's in college, right? Mm-hmm. Now you have a whole nother world of professionals that are already signed athletes. And so they're pretty much like, we want the girl that just broke the collegiate record, Jeannie Pratt. She will absolutely get a contract.
Yeah.
The low dawn that ran 12, I think at the time was 1280.
Uh-huh.
No, thank if you prove yourself, one day we'll come and give you a dollar or two, but no. So it was very cutthroat. And it got to a point where I remember I didn't have an agent because I mean, literally like.
You have to pay for an agent. Like,
and no one just, it sounds crazy. No one believed in like, I can't fault them because sometimes in a certain way, there are times that people just kind of look at something and they're like, she's running fast. That's a for sure. You would have to work for me. You would have to try and really find me meets and all that stuff. And that just wasn't something that, you know, people were kind of wanting to really do. And I had a guy help me out, a friend of mine, her agent. He helped me get into some meets because she was getting in some. And that's what happened in 2007. But it wasn't a full, like, it was
What were your jobs that you were working?
I was an academic coordinator at UCLA.
Okay.
I tutored at nighttime high school students. And then I was one of my good friends, her and her husband had a track club and it was called VAST, V-A-S-T. And I was one of their assistant coaches. And she was so awesome because hard days she would let me come out and I'll be sitting down coaching like, get around the track at this time. I would be
so tired.
Yeah.
How did you like mentally move forward and like, at some point, like, right, woo is me, but like also like I got to put that behind me and like I can't compare myself to these girls who have contracts and don't have to do what I do because this is what it is. How did you get your head in that place?
So honestly, that was not easy because it's one thing, and this is where I really love to talk to people to say, just try and really understand in this moment, there was no reason on this earth that I should have believed that I could have been on an Olympic team, let alone an Olympic champion. There are going to be 100% times where your dream seems like you are insane and you should be checked into an insane asylum. that's just a reality. Like, think about this. I just said the three girls that I was at practice with every day, and they only take three to the Olympics. So that's just in my training group. We're not talking about the girls in Texas, Florida, Oregon, anywhere else. Why would I think that I could compete with them with no money, had not won anything in college, and you think you could race them? What I decided to do was I knew that I had more in, like I knew that I hadn't reached my full potential. And what I was very okay with saying was, I'm not willing to walk away from this sport until I know that the tank is empty. My father was very clear when I graduated from UCLA. We had a phone conversation and he said, track was really fun. We sent you there to get a degree at UCLA. You got that. And he said, now it's time to enter the real world. And I say this to say, how do you tell your father that he knows what the real world is? He's living life. Mm-hmm. Like he's doing all the things that one day you'll have to do with pay bills and have a job and raise kids and all that. How do you say, no, I'm not going to follow? You don't know anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I say that to say, if you have a plan, because I did, I wrote down, I'm not going to tell how old I am. No, it was 2006, I graduated. And from 2006, 2008, I wrote out a plan of I'm going to work these jobs. I'm going to train. I'm going to do everything Bobby tells me to do. I'm going to, find me meets and all this. I'm going to work the plan till 2008. And if it doesn't work, then I will absolutely go and get a job and live what you call the real world, Dad. But I just wasn't willing to give up on myself. And so every day I told myself, leave the tank empty. What you have to do is sometimes when you're going against giants, you just got to nip away, get closer and closer and closer. Don't always think it's supposed to be just huge jump. I said I graduated in 06. I didn't start taking heads in my group until about beginning of 08 a little bit. And then you have knee surgery. And you're like, doggone it. I was just getting it. Right.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Just keep believing, keep believing, keep believing. Leave the tank empty.
Wow. You know, when you said earlier, like people would say to you, like someone's always working harder.
Yes.
Who said that?
Well, in a way, coaches kind of say that, but they said it in a positive way, right?
Yeah. They're trying to get you to tap your potential.
Exactly. Right. They're saying it in a way of saying that, you know, good day. But on the day that you think they see you and they're like, okay, I told you to come through, say in 60 seconds, you came through in like 61 low. That's not good enough.
Mm.
Because if they'll just say that they would never do this, but I'm saying, say if an athlete in their head would, Jenny Crawford, would Sally come through in 61? No, they come through in 60. Even if it was 60.9999, they're going to give me what I asked for. Mm-hmm. You like, so, and that's where I feel like they would just find, and, but I'll say this as a coach, you have to know the right times to say this stuff. Mm-hmm. You got to learn your athlete and know when to say it. Every time, it's not necessary all the time. If your athlete is already beating themselves up, maybe you don't need to come in and say, yeah, because Sally would be working. Well, thank you.
Uh-huh.
Right? But, you know, on those times when you see them and like they're on their fifth set and they have to go to 10 and you see them starting to buckle mentally, you're like, no, now's not the time. Your competitors are not buckling at 5.
Uh-huh.
They're buckling at 11. You're like, I understand exactly. You know, so those types of times. So, yeah. So for me, I feel like my coaches. So in high school, his name was Nino Fanoy. He actually coached Jackie Joanna Kersey as well.
Oh, wow.
I know. Like I said, the story's crazy.
That's so crazy that you just both happen to be from the same town.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I've been blessed with some coaches that, and they'll say through their fault, like learning good and bad, they absolutely talk to athletes in the wrong time and yelled out stuff of like, that was a little far.
You know? Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Hey friends, if you're looking to run a half marathon or a marathon coming up in the fall, the summer, I offer training plans on my website at lindseyhine.com. All the way from beginner to advanced, they come with pace charts so you can hit your workouts at specific times, depending on what your goals are. I always say, just listen to your body though. Don't be glued to these times, but they can help you indicate what kind of fitness you're in for your half marathon or your marathon. They come with pre and post-run stretching and strength. We've seen a lot of success, a lot of Boston qualifiers coming out of these training plans. And if you're looking for a simple way to train, look no further. Go to lindseyhine.com to check out the training plans. All right, back to the show. What do you think, like, if a coach or a parent has a kid that has, like, talent and you're like, they could go far and I see it, but the kid doesn't want to put the work in, like, what do you think would be good things to say to them?
Well, I think a really good thing is nowadays, there's the information is everywhere.
Yeah.
Right. And so you could find a YouTube where there's so many athletes that have YouTube channels that are just like talking about, like, you know, hard times that they dealt with or really motivation and all this. Find someone that you've heard your child say, they're like, oh man, I really like this athlete. Okay. Well, they said this, right? Because, you know, if I'm saying it, I don't know anything, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, so that's an example. Or you could, like, so many of us, like me, I always say my Instagram is 100% me. So if you reach out, I reply to people all the time. And so there are a lot of athletes that will send a quick message, you know what I mean, to your athlete, you know, to your child, just saying, like, hey, you know what I mean? Like, listen, if you want it, it's going to be sacrifices that will have to be made and blah, 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 right? And then also sometimes, depending on your child, you may have to find some cautionary tales of the person that's the story is, nah, I'm working here because I didn't do the things that are necessary. Mm-hmm. Because they have to understand, yeah, you can listen to this, but you can still keep making these same decisions. And then you can go ahead and all of a sudden be the person's like, yeah, 5 years ago, oh, I was real good. It's like, well, having them understand that literally your life could go either way.
Relive in the glory days.
Yeah.
Did you ever have a moment, I guess it would be before you won gold that you thought about giving up.
Sometimes when I say stuff, I'm like, I don't want anybody to think that I'm like, no, I can say I did not. But I absolutely had moments where I cried so unbelievably hard. I was so mad at God because I could not believe that he thought I could handle one more thing on my plate. Like, you know, the life that you've given me and you think that I can handle one more thing. That was just, it was moments, it was just mind blowing of like, I promise you, I know I'm not perfect, but I'm trying to follow your will. And this, like, you know, it's just moments of that. And so knowing that, I'm also someone that I'm very okay with, be in that moment, be mad. Like, it is okay if things are not working out and like another thing, like another thing, you know, because you have people that are like, keep believing and keep pushing. And you're on the 10th thing that you feel like you've pushed through. More in that 10th thing not working. It's okay to be furious, to be pissed even, but you can't stay in it, right? Have the moment. Respect it. You're mad because you worked hard for that. But if it didn't, okay, now we're going to take a step back, gather yourself, regroup, and then go after the next thing. And that's how I've always decided to do it. Because like I said, I just felt like all options were not exhausted for me to say, oh, the Olympics isn't for me.
Yeah. Did you, so after you won, were you like, okay, I know this isn't a fluke because like I know who I am. But did you feel like you had to prove? Like, did you feel like you had more to prove?
It was like, how is this the way that my mind went? Girl, like, relax.
You just won.
Well, yeah, because, okay, what it really turned into, I'll never forget my next meet. It was awesome because, oh my God, they're going to pay you some money. But literally my mind went to like, they're going to pay you money. Like, you have to win now. Are you supposed to win everything? Like, is this what it is? Like, I was freaking out because it's like, oh, shoot. Like, people are watching you now. Like, before, like, you got your chance to run in Stockholm and they put you in lane, like, 8. You know, and it was like, oh, I'm going to get somebody. Yay. But no one's looking for it. Just Bobby's watching and you know, it's like.
Yeah.
But now you're like, oh, you're in lane 4 or 5. Okay. And you literally have the gold bib. That means you're an Olympic champion. Everyone's gunning for you. The meet director just paid you what he paid you. And in my mind, it's like, means win. It's like, that's not quite what it means. But I turn it into all these things. And it was hard at first. It was very hard to kind of juggle those expectations that, yes, there were still some on me, but mainly the ones I had put on myself. Once again, Bobby never said any of this. The person that I had listened to this whole time never said any of that. I just ran amok with all these crazy things. on my own, and it took me a while to really kind of undo. Like all of 2009, it was just like, oh my God, you're getting paid and you got to win. And so what it did was it took away a lot of that. So until I got to Worlds, I might've been like undefeated in 2009, but it took away all the joy of those wins. I absolutely turned into a mental monster, as in I knew how good I was. Like the thing, you know how you like, I believe in myself. I believe. But like after that, it was like, nah, y'all in trouble. Like, so just let me give you a moment of who I turned into. When I say turned into, how I realized I was like, oh, they in trouble. Cause I know I'm a dog now. Like I didn't fear anybody. Like I was like, y'all are going to pay for having to line up with me. It was just like, my mindset was like, I feel bad for every single one of you that have to line. Like, so it's like, yay, that's fun to think like, right? Cause it's like, you know, but then after the race, it was like, hey girl, like that was me when we got to the line. Before it, no, like they're literally just regular people like me. But when we got to the line, I was like, I don't care what your dreams are. It sucks that you have dreams today because I'm destroying them.
It
was weird because like for me, that's how intense the hurdles were. It was like,
You need that to win? Like you know what I mean? Like you had like this winning mentality.
It's weird because for me to push myself, that's who I, yes. Yeah, but I'll say this. It wasn't, I respected everything of what they were and who they were. I knew that I was lined up with other dogs. It was just for me, I'm like, I know what I'm capable of and I'm about to do it today. And I'm sorry that you have to be witness to it. Like that was,
so badass.
I know. And it's funny because I know that that sounds, but that is the killer mentality for 12 seconds. And then it was like, the world is a beautiful place. In my head, someone would say I probably look crazy because it was like, kill, kill, kill. I'm so blessed to be here. Like, girl, like that was, it was weird. I did. I went into this space and then you come out like, that was so fun for 12 seconds. And it was like, was it?
That's like a different
yes
breed of human. I mean, it's like,
no, absolutely.
When you're saying that, I'm like thinking of Kobe Bryant. Like I'm thinking of like mm-hmm. just the cream of the crop of all the sports and like, where does their mind go in and, those moments?
And that's what I, when I hear athletes talk like that, I'm like, absolutely. I identify with all of that. And so when I help my husband now with the track team and stuff, like, obviously I don't go there yet. Cause you have to see who relates to that. Right. Cause everyone, like I said, some people don't say, I need to kill things. They're just like, no, I really want to be my best and I'm going to push, push, push. And so for me, I'm like, today is your day to be your best. Like, let's listen. Who are you today? Ah, you know what I mean? And that's the, and then other ones I'm like, are we killing dreams today or are we not? Like, because you, like I said, you got to be that coach. That
read the room. Yeah.
Know what your athlete needs. And like you said, hearing Kobe Bryant talk, I was like, absolutely. I know what he means when you look at your competitors and you're like, you thought that was good, didn't you? Like that's, I mean, your little warm up. Oh, I'm about to destroy
that's
you.
Cute.
I know. I don't know. But I'll say this. I always say, I think I did a pretty good job juggling it because I have so many friends that are hurdlers after the sport, right?
Yeah.
And then during the races, you know, like I said, enemies. But afterwards, I go and eat with the hurdlers. Like, we're in each other's hotel room. So I'm like, I obviously did a good job of showing that, like, this is the competitive Dawn. But by all means, you are a human. I love you. Hey, girl. Hey. You know. So.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good. So I know your husband was like a childhood friend, but like, when did you start becoming a couple?
Not until we were 27.
Okay.
I know. Right. So yeah, we met in a hurdle race in the eighth grade. I was the only girl. And so they put me in with the boys and he was the only boy to beat me. And I was like, who is that? Who beat me? And so he said for him, he's like, I'm a boy. Why is she so mad? But I'm like, I don't like, I want to compete. Like I was, like I said, on the track, I am a competitor. And so, like I said, we were really good friends from all through high school. Like he was my cute friend, Alonzo, but he was my really good friend. And then over time, and it was the fact that like, so in Illinois, I have my own day. So Dawn Harper Day, October 6th.
Yes.
I go and I speak to, you know, all the kind of schools and stuff and go to different places and speak in my hometown. And he reached out and was kind of like, hey, so can you squeeze in my school? And I was like, sure. And then it was both of us saw each other and was like, oh, shoot. Yep, he's really cute. Yeah. This is a problem for me. And then, yeah.
So is he's the track coach, but does he do anything else at the school?
Yeah, he's a math teacher.
Okay, okay. Mm-hmm. So he reached out. He knew who you were and he reached out. Okay.
Yes.
You guys are so cute together.
Thank you.
Tell me what you're doing. Like, tell me about your podcast. And
oh my goodness. So yes, our podcast, what happened is we sit and talk about things all, like when the kids are asleep, for some reason we're really staying up to like 12, sometimes 1. I'm like, you have to go to work in the morning. We can't act like we don't live together, babe. And so, but we're just talking about, did you see this? And then say we saw some relationship, something that happened, or one of the kids at the school did whatever. And we're just up talking about it. Like, you know, how will we handle things with our kids? Like if this happened and, you know, we're both like, okay, well, Harper, we really feel like as of right now, she's the type of kid that, you know, really relates to this. And we're talking about, you know what I mean? So just everything, relationship things, like what happened with Simone Biles and her husband, Jonathan Owens. And I mean, just like everything. And so we're like, should we start it? And we've had people tell us before, like, you guys should have a podcast. And we're like, yeah, we don't have time for it. And we finally were like, okay, well, why not? People are always asking our opinion on stuff anyway. And so, yeah, we say everything, family, fitness, and for relationship, a friendship that can turn into a relationship.
Love like it.
Yeah. So
Simone Biles, when her husband said that he was the catch, is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Do you
Girl, the world set fire. Like, I have so many opinions on that. And I'm just like, so the only thing I'll say, I feel like, and this is my thing, I totally understand when someone is famous like Simone Biles, so many of us, like, we're such fans that we're like, you know, she's like, she likes sis. She cousin. She sis Simone Biles. She cousins. And we love them so much that we want to protect them. Feel like someone says, but listen, if you watch any of her interviews, by no means, she's not a run over. Like, she's not going to be with someone where she's like, okay, yeah. Jonathan, thank you so much, honey. I'm just happy that you chose me. Like, That's not her. Even in the interview, he even said where, I think he said during Christmas time, he wanted to buy like all these gifts and it was getting expensive. And he was like, she told me like, nah, babe, we're not doing that. And he was like, all right, guess we're not. And she was like, yeah, like she was speaking. And I'm like, he's not, she's happy. Like, what are we talking about?
Yeah.
Vanity Fair, where she said, they asked her about like her career and the happiest days of her life. And she said, when she won the Olympics, she thought that was the happiest day of her life until she got married.
Oh,
it's so beautiful, but we're like, she shouldn't be with him. And I'm like, oh,
well, like, yeah, like what was his demeanor? Was he joking? Like, who knows?
Literally, like I was like, when he said he wasn't like women or not, men are the, I didn't take it that way. And I understand that people are like, you cannot be with a Simone Biles and say you're the catch. How I took it was he's saying I have value too. In this world that says Simone Biles is here and untouchable.
Uh-huh.
He's like, I'm worthy of being with her. That's how I took it. That's how I took it. Because think about it. Someone that's that, like a Beyonce, if she wasn't with Jay-Z, we'd be like, who can be with Beyonce? And I feel like that's how we look at Simone Biles. And he's like, I love her a lot. Like, can I? Yeah. So, yeah. So that's the type of stuff we talked on the podcast.
I love it. I love it so much. Also, I feel like my husband would say, not that I'm Simone Biles, but like my husband would say that to him, be like, yeah, I'm the cat. Like, I feel like
yeah.
Joking around. Like, hey,
come on, right?
You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I wish I was a kid on you and your husband's track team.
Yeah, we have fun. We do. And I race them. So
you do? Well, what are you doing, like, fitness wise? Like, how are you staying in shape?
So, yes. Well, I feel like I'm always going to be a runner. Like, that's, yeah. I'm going to just ooze running.
And what does that mean to you? Like, because your distance is so short.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I talk to sprinters and they're like, the most I ever run is like 2 miles, but it's like, right. Well,
I don't disagree with them. So, okay. So now that I'm done, I still like track workouts.
Okay.
So even if I do a long run, like in life, mm-hmm. maybe two, but why am I going 2 miles? Because for me, if I do a mile, I'm the type that's like, well, I'll just try and get my mile faster. I don't want to go 2 miles, right?
Yeah,
so I'll work at that. So I'm dying at the mile because I'm like, let's get it to 6. You know what I'm saying? Let's get it to. So that's where I feel like I kind of do things a little different. Because so many friends are like, oh, you're going to be a distance runner. You're going to be a miler. And I'm like, like you'll do like marathons. I believe cars should go that far. But then I have the nerve to marry someone that, because we are really good friends with Stephanie Bruce and her wonderful, terrible, wonderful husband, Ben, my beautiful husband, you can run. You should do this. He's like, I want to do a marathon. I'm like, what? Like, yeah, we went to her camp, their camp, Bruce camp.
Fun.
Talked to him and they're like, Lonzo, you should do it. You could do it. And the other runners, okay, which they know who they are.
Uh-huh.
They're like, no, Lonzo, come on. And he did. Before that, the longest I think he said he had ever gone in his life for 3 miles. He went for 8 miles. 4 miles uphill and 4 miles down.
At the camp.
So who's taking care of him for the next couple of days? it was hilarious.
Is he going to do one?
So, yes, for sure. He's been training. He did a 3, he was getting his 3K. I know that's short. He's getting his 3K time down. But then he had a bike accident because it was a day where it was it cold or something where he didn't want to go for a run. So he went on a bike. And like the spokes and stuff, something happened, came off, scratched his leg up, beat his ankle up. The bike broke. He fell. Somebody had to come and drive him home. Like, messed him up pretty bad. So training got messed up because of that. So. He's pretty bummed and sad because training was going really good.
Listen, we're going to replay this when you cross the finish line of your first marathon.
And I'm just going to be like, someone stop me. I don't want to be. Yes.
Oh, my gosh. I was going to say, Alicia Montano is running marathons now, but she's 800. That is distance.
Exactly. I was going to say 800. Yes, you guys are sprinters. No, you're not.
Yeah.
But listen, you're a distance runner, and
that's distance for you.
On to her calling.
Yeah, yeah. So I know you were partnered with Ann Mother and Kaden Shea for a while there. Do you still do work with them?
No, not right now, but I know that they're definitely working with a lot of moms. I keep up with them. I follow them and I talk to Alicia, all the time and stuff. So yeah, they're doing some great things. I mean, they're growing like crazy though.
That's awesome.
Like, yeah. Really, really cool. So,
All right, let's wrap up with our end of the podcast questions here. Ooh. Thanks for sharing your story. This is so fun. You are just like a fireball of energy.
Thank you.
I mean, is that a compliment?
Oh,
you like that?
Oh, I am. I know. I'm not.
You are. But it's like you see your personality and you're like, this translates to 100 meter hurdles. You know what I mean?
I agree.
I mean, it's like, it's almost
all in a room. You could say, okay, I'm guessing, you know, like distance or this and that. Okay. Maybe you could absolutely kind of pinpoint, especially being in a sport, you can pinpoint something for sure.
Uh-huh. Well, you've accomplished a lot, but what is something professionally or personally you'd like to do that you haven't done yet?
Oh, I absolutely know. I want to host my own show regarding sports. I totally want to almost, I think Liza said it's called Inside, that's going to kill me. But no, I want to go to athletes, kind of their track, their house. I want to sit down and talk with them and learn more about them, particularly track athletes, because we need the notoriety. But yeah, I just feel like there's so many stories in track and I think I connect with people really well and I'm able to pull things out of them and stuff. So my desire is to host my own show.
And you have the perspective of being the athlete.
A little bit.
Literally on every level there. That's awesome. What's the best, most recent book you've read? I feel like sometimes people are like, are you kidding me? I don't have time to read.
Well, yes, no. Oh my gosh. Okay. So it's going to be hilarious. I'm a Monk fan and I've read like all his books. It was a series on TV. Monk, he's a detective. He has OCD. He just had
okay.
A movie. Yeah, I did a whole post about it. Like I saw that a movie came out and I was like, I told my husband, I was like, so what day can you and the kids be gone or upstairs?
Cause you needed to binge it.
I'm watching this by myself. And so one of his books, I think it was one that he went to Germany. I like reread it.
Okay. I say that because I feel like whenever people have little kids, they're like, what are you talking about? I don't read books.
Well, then in that case, Cat in the Hat last night or something?
I know. what are you binging any shows right now?
Yes. FBI Most Wanted. Mm-hmm. I just have to jump on here.
Okay. Nice. You're like, come on, wrap this up. What's the best, most recent concert you've been to?
When I say let me see. Okay. Because I was going to say it was maybe like Destiny's Child when I was younger. So that show.
Destiny's Child.
Exactly. But I went to it's not a concert. It was a comedy. Joe Coy.
Okay. I don't know.
He was in LA. I know he's a comedian, girl. Okay. Like it's on Netflix now. So I was there when he recorded. Okay. For Netflix.
Okay.
It was no.
Is he funny? Is he good?
I love Joe Coy. Like I love Joe Coy. Like he is.
I am so excited. I love stand-up comedy and I have no idea who that is.
Oh, I'm excited for you. Yay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll watch that tonight. Last message to leave with our audience.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So I said a little bit of it earlier, and I know you may have heard this before, but let me just repeat and reiterate this. Even if someone makes you feel like you should be checked into an insane asylum, your dreams, your life is valid. You are worthy. You are worth it. Leave the tank absolutely empty. It does not have to be sports. It does not have to be track. I know we talked a lot of track heavy things. But it could be anything. Owning your own business. Like I said, hosting my own show. I have to leave the tank empty. So if it doesn't work out, you can confidently walk on to something else with your head held high and knowing that you are not a quitter and you are someone that accomplishes things, meaning leaving the tank empty. Enjoy life because I've gone through so many things where you're chasing that goal so much that the journey, you just like next, next, next. No, the page that you're on is just as valid and as important as the final page. Enjoy life. The people that are with you, rock with them, love them, thank them, and be someone that is in someone else's corner too, because you know how important it is. So be there for somebody else and enjoy life, man.
Dawn Harper Nelson. Thank you.
Of course, of course. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, friends. Thanks so much for being here today. Thank you, Dawn, for coming on the podcast. You're definitely going to want to go check out Dawn on Instagram if you're not already following over there. She's dharp100mh. Let her know what you thought about the episode. You can find me. I'm LindsayHine626 on Instagram. This show, everything you need to know, the show notes, everything we talked about is at sandywayproductions.com. And my personal website is lindsayhine.com. If you work for a race or you're a race director and you're looking for someone to come speak at your events or moderate panels, definitely reach out to me, lindsay@sandyboyproductions.com. And we can chat about that. Thanks for being here. I'm so grateful for you. I hope you took as much from this conversation with Dawn as I did. Have a great rest of your day, a great weekend, and we'll see you next week on I'll Have Another.